The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about. It's time to get this party started tonight.
And 3, 2.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime, and you're listening to Footy Prime Daily, and this is a special one. First of all, no James Sharman. He's taking a leave of absence. He's on sabbatical for bereavement, anger issues. He'll be returning. We don't know when. But in his stead, we have the lovely Cara Lang Romero joining us, my ex-teammate. I'm always pleased to have her on, and somebody with a unique point of view. See how I did that, Wonger? I didn't say POV. We're not going to say it. I'm Amy Walsh. I know. And we've also got Craig Forrest and Dan Wong, the aforementioned Dan Wong, or Daniele Wongerton, as Charles has been calling him recently. So, Cara, we were just talking about the grind before we pressed the record button of covering this World Cup, how we're fortunate and privileged to do it. Mm-hmm. How have you been consuming your World Cup? I actually want to mention, for anybody who doesn't follow you on Twitter or on socials, on Instagram, you should be, because you're missing out. And you posted an extremely funny kind of you're in withdrawal because there are no regular World Cup games on anymore. We've just got the third place match. We've got the final coming up on Sunday. But you posted something very funny. So will you talk about that and like your experience so far covering this World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, it's been busy, as it has for you guys, just kind of all over the place, especially with having 8 games here in LA at SoFi, going to those games and then covering the games that aren't at SoFi from studio. I've been doing a lot of morning show stuff too. So that's like 4 a.m. wake ups, going, previewing the game in the studio and then coming back and watching it. It's been cool to watch all the games, not here in LA with my family though. Like that's been pretty cool, because it's been a good balance of it. You know, I've covered tournaments where you're like, say the London Olympics, you're gone. You're completely separate from your family. Your family mm-hmm. has no idea what you're up to, but they're kind of in the middle of all of it. And we're getting to enjoy a lot of the games together. And I've still been able to like go to a few watch parties with friends. So it's been a good balance in that way. It's tough to watch a game with friends when you need to like talk about it after the fact, because you're like, everybody shut up.
I know, I have to focus.
Yeah.
You're like in a corner with a notepad.
I'm working.
So that's been cool, but it's been awesome because I feel like I'm a part of it as a fan, and I'm also working it, which I mean, that's what you want. You want to actually fully get to experience the whole thing.
Yeah,
for people that haven't been to that stadium before, how good is it? Because it looks amazing on television.
It's beautiful. It really is beautiful. And the temperature is perfect. And it's the ceiling is so cool because the sun comes out and you can still feel it. So it's like there's shade on the pitch mm-hmm. and there's shade. But also when it is bright and sunny, it feels like you forget that you're not outside. And the grass was perfect. They did such a good job of installing that grass. And yeah, it was just, I mean, there's really not a bad seat in the house. The press box is incredibly far away. The one thing I will say is I don't love an NFL press box because it's like a full glass enclosure and you can't really feel the noise of the stadium. So I found myself stepping outside, going to the media tribune quite a bit, like during big moments when you really, especially in the Canada game, like where you want to feel like you're there and really get a taste of that. So that's odd. I don't really understand, I guess, because NFL games are just so loud, it's probably like impossible to work, but
right.
I don't see why you would want to do that. Like make it completely encased in glass, but it's a great view regardless. So I never had a bad view of the games, which was really cool.
So did you have a favorite then that you covered? So how many total would have been played at SoFi?
So there were 8 games at SoFi. One of them we didn't cover. I think it was Iran, New Zealand, because we had no show at that time. And it was like a midweek, midday game. But I still went to it with my credential just because I could.
I'm covering it.
Yeah, I'm here. So 7 of the games I covered. I think the 2 Spain games were probably my favorite. Mm. You know, I know people have been saying Spain was boring up to this point when things got serious, but I, you know, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. Sorry, Dan, you're wrong. It was so, just the movement off the ball, the way they dominate in possession. It just like you could, I think when you're there, you can just really feel like what a force they are and just how dominant and in control they are. It just seems like they never lost control all the way up to now. And then now here they are in the final. So yeah, but I think the Spain games, but also the US games, obviously,
right,
just because of the following and the atmosphere. Mm. Yeah.
I was going to say, this is my education. And every time people tell me about, oh, you've got to watch this part, that's part of my education of learning this sport. I mean, it's really, and I was wondering, we're going to get into it, but do you find yourself educating people because it's new, at least the exhibition of it all is new? It is now front and center for, look, NBC does a great job on Premier League on Sundays and sometimes Saturdays, but it's not like, hey, everyone's lining up unless it's a true fan. So all of a sudden you're in a position to go, you know, what you just did, the buildup, do you find yourself educating people?
Well, specifically this tournament, especially doing a morning show where your audience is really like people who are at home watching TV at 7, then 8, then 9, then 10, and you're doing it over and over again. And the hosts really know nothing about soccer. So that's been interesting because the questions that you're answering are not exactly what you're used to answering, but it is fun because exactly like you're saying, it's an opportunity to draw in more fans and explain to people why this is such a massive deal and why the game is so beautiful and what you should be appreciating about it. But one thing kind of on that note that I did notice, and I'll say, I mentioned the American fans and why that was so cool. It was cool, but there were also major moments where it was cringy because the American fans, just their style of support is different from any other country in the world, I think, and the costumes that they wear and the chants that they have. There were moments where I was like, oh God, please stop. But then at the same time, you're watching the games and you can really feel it when you're in the stadium. They are cheering in the right moments. You know, they're cheering for the hard tackles on the end line and they're recognizing, like, I think that that was a big difference here. I think that the game has grown in this country in that way. And I think probably in Canada too, to where I think overall the fans really are understanding the game on a different level. And part of that is also because the team is better. They've got better players. They've got players playing around the world and fans are following those players during their club seasons as well. So I think I noticed the growth the most in those moments.
That's so interesting.
Sorry, Dubs. Just Kara and I were on before the podcast started and Kara revealed to me that she had just read your email from last night about the rundown. And she's like, I didn't know I was going to be doing that. I didn't know we were going to be talking about the political situation.
I clicked the link.
We'll just talk about anything. How about that? She's like, okay.
I clicked the link and then I saw the little blurb. And I'm like, does she always do that?
Because no, I don't.
Because I'm like, oh man, I could have been so much more prepared for all the other ones I've done in the past if I just read the email.
No, you're always prepared, which is why there's no need to do that, to kind of brief you on what we plan to cover, because you're so well-versed, you're so well-prepared in everything that you do, whether you're approaching a morning show or you're doing like a soccer podcast or a soccer program.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
I've been doing, or I did at the beginning of the tournament, it was more front loaded, the Sportsnet hits, which are like 4 minutes. And I would compare that to kind of the morning show where it's a zoomed out 10,000 foot view. You have to really parse your words. You have to be concise and you have to hit all the important notes. Mm-hmm. So I distill everything down. Sharms is so good at it. Forrest is so good at it. It's something I feel like I had to get into. Like I had to get into the rhythm of it so that I could hit the points I wanted to hit without missing anything and informing a viewer who might not be plugged into the soccer scene. So do you feel like doing that type of work helped inform the work that you're doing when you're really getting into the weeds, really getting in depth into the soccer? And then the second part is really interesting to me about what you said about the American fans. Do you think that's a North American thing, or do you think that it's differentiated from the Canadian fan?
I think it's differentiated from the Canadian fan because I think a lot of the fans here in the US are American football fans, and they cheer for things the way they cheer for American football teams. They chant the way they chant for American football teams. It felt like it could have been either way. Like if there was like a USA football team, you could have been at like, and also part of that is we're in an NFL stadium. So maybe that was part of the vibe as well. But I mean, maybe I'm biased, but I have always felt like Canadian soccer fans understand the soccer culture a little bit more. So I think that foundation is there because of the history from all of the other countries that they've supported it before they jumped on the support for the Canadian men's national team and women's national team. So I think it's a little different. And then as far as like zooming out and how that informs the way I cover the game, I think that it has helped because it's made me realize what's important to new fans and what the game looks like on a grand scale to them and what they care about. I mean, it's so different. So many of the questions in the morning show are about Erling Haaland and Jude Bellingham and how handsome he is.
And I'm not wrong.
Let's bring it back to soccer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's, but it is so cool to see. And that was something we talked about is how Norway, especially, they have not just drawn the attention of the football world, but just the pop culture world. You know, like I've loved seeing that the number of like my Instagram feed is just a giant stream of Erling Haaland memes. And I'm constantly getting DMs from other moms about Erling Haaland or Jude Bellingham. And I'm like, great, whatever it takes at this point, just welcome everybody. Come on in. There's something for everyone.
I think in North America, we need to work on our chants a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when you talk about Canada, being at that game, we flew to the game in Houston. And being at that game, I was like, ooh, yeah, can we, like, I wanted to say something at some point, like, we've got time, guys. Like, we've got 4 years. Let's really sit down and figure this out because these are not working.
Hand out some flyers or something.
Yes, something. Ooh. Like do a contest. Somebody make a contest or somebody hire some, you know, songwriter to make something really epic. And we've got 4 years to practice them. Let's go.
Yeah. Well, I have to say the Voyagers do a really good job and they have some pretty intricate and kind of complex, more traditional, as it were, chance. It's just about spreading the word and getting more people involved, right? And getting them all together. I was proud though, and I want to ask you about being at that Canada game in LA. And there was the one meme of the woman who loses her phone, and then another one of a group of Voyagers. So they were kind of all over the stadium, spread out, scattered, but there was a group of them that were able to sit together and they put a stop to the wave. So I've never been prouder.
Thank God. Yes. Well, when that, you could see it on the Jumbotron, the like world's biggest Jumbotron, the lady drop her phone. And then I'm just like standing there waiting for the person below her, like with the black eye, like, when are we going to do that? I want to see the aftermath of the phone.
I know for sure. What happened to the phone? So what was it like being in that stadium? So did you cover then the South Africa match?
Yeah.
So what was it like to be there as a fan, as a former international Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer, but you've also, again, got a job to do, to your earlier point? Being at watch parties and trying to balance the whole thing. How did you balance it on the day?
So you asked me what my favorite game was. Obviously, that was my favorite game, but it's in its own category because of how emotional it was. I was crying during the anthem. I was crying when Eustáquio scored. I was crying when the game ended. And then
Carr,
like,
is a crier, though, friends, just to be clear. Carr is a crier.
You and Dubs must have had some, when you played together, must have had some cry sessions.
Literally, Ricky always laughs because he says, how come every time I Google you, all the pictures of you are of you crying? And he's mentioned with Amy.
Well, there's one. It's after, I think it's the Olympics. We got eliminated by the U.S. in a quarterfinals. And it's really sad one where you're crying, your face is being hidden in your jersey, and I'm like, they're there. Yeah, they're there.
Get it together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I my only response to him was, well, we kind of lost a lot. So
there's true.
And big games. I mean, that was like the quarterfinal of the Olympics, and then the US went on to win it all. And also it was like a 4-hour game. We were emotionally destroyed.
Yeah, where Aaron McLeod did her ACL and Britt punctured a lung and broke a rib.
Yeah, right. And we like spent 2 hours waiting for the Thunder and Lightning delay in the locker room and had to come back out and play extra time. It was draining. Okay.
Yeah. That's why I'm a crier. That's why.
But yeah. But yeah, that Canada game, I mean, it was, and I was just so excited afterwards. And to do my hit in the fan zone afterwards, like surrounded by Canadian fans too, was really cool. And also just all the Mexican fans, because there were so many green jerseys. I don't know if you noticed in the stadium, it was Canadian fans and Mexican fans there. And because so many thought that could be a Mexico game, so they bought a bunch of tickets. I talked to some people from Monterrey. They had bought tickets in advance, and then it didn't end up being Mexico. And they're like, well, we might as well go anyways. So, but also I think Mexicans were the outnumbered everybody at every game. They just showed up to even Ricky came to the Canada game in his Mexico jersey.
And wait, I was like, let him do that?
I mean, I don't control him, but I was like, could you not at least put a hat on? And he was like standing in front of the mirror, like, had a Canada hat, had a Mexico hat. Last decision was, we're going to go with Mexico. And then so he was head to toe. I was like, come on. Your wife played for Canada. You can't just at least wear a hat. But they're diehards. It's like, deep, deep, deep love. So I wasn't surprised to see all the Mexican fans, but it was cool to see them after that game with the Canadian fans celebrating, and just the way everybody's like congratulating each other and genuinely happy for each other. And to have the Canadian fans like in the background of my hit was really cool, just because I didn't think I'd get to experience that working in the US, covering mostly the US team. So that was definitely a big highlight for me.
Everywhere anybody went, there's always Mexican jerseys, and they were tough to get. I talked to a couple of shops in Seattle.
Hard.
And it's like, we can't keep them in stock. We're folding Adidas, trying to get more jerseys. Not happening. Like, they could keep selling them. I think there was something like 6 or 7 million jerseys. That's not including all the replica jerseys.
And the replica jerseys are beautiful. You would never know. And then on top of the replica jerseys, you've got like the Gap and Old Navy just printing out Team Mexico gear as well. A lot of the people a lot of the people at the like watch parties that we went to, like especially for the Mexico games, like some of Ricky's family and friends, like I'm like, whoa, that's an amazing jersey. Where'd you get that? They're like, Old Navy. Well, they just latched onto it too. They saw the opportunity. And
this episode of Footy Prime is brought to you by Old Navy and the Gap. But while we're saying, we'd like to thank our sponsor. This is World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by Tim Hortons. It's Game On with Tim's.
I'm so happy you said that, Wonger, because I was going to prompt you for it, because I wanted to, I'd ask Cara what her favorite game was or match was, covering all those matches at SoFi, and you covered that South Africa match. So there's a moment within that is one of my favorites when we're talking about our Canadian men's national team. So why don't you tell us, and you start us off here, for your favorite moment as part of this World Cup run for our men's national team, and then Wonger and Craig, you guys can weigh in as well.
My favorite moment has to be the Eustáquio goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't just off the top of my head, I can't think of any other moment where I was more proud because they rose to the occasion, but also it was a beautiful goal. The technique required to put that in the back of the net, I think it just really highlighted how far this program has come and the type of players that this program can boast. And just for it to be Eustachio as well. I mean, I've had the pleasure of covering him here at LAFC for the first half of the MLS season. And he's just an incredible leader. You know, he jumped right into that LAFC team full of superstars, mind you, and took the reins, took control. He was dictating from the first minute he was on the pitch. He was dictating the tempo of the game, just so leading verbally as well. Like you could just see, and you saw that as well with the Canadian team. And so that for me, it just felt like a massive moment for him personally, for the team, for the program. And just like a moment where I was just really proud of what this team looks like in 2026.
I would agree with that. I love to watch Stephen Eustachio play, and a lot of discussion about who should have the armband, but it doesn't matter to him, right? Like he's on record as saying, wearing the armband, and Forrest talks about this a lot, that with some guys, with some players, it's a performative thing. It's what it means optically. But for him, he's going to lead the same way regardless of whether he has the armband, right?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm, when I say with LAFC, I mean, there are plenty of other leaders on that LAFC team. You've got Sun Heung-min and Denny Bouanga, and he just jumped right into a leadership role. And that says a lot about him as a person and a player.
How about for you, Forrest? Did you have a favorite moment if you have to pick out one from our men's national team run?
Well, it's hard to beat the Eustachio moment, of course, but I think it was the opening game for me. You know, sitting there with the host broadcasters, center field, seeing the flags being dragged out, Canada, Bosnia, the atmosphere, the buzz around the whole place. It was something I had never seen before in Canada. It was just extraordinary. And then when Kyle Larin comes on and ties it up, that moment itself was just electrifying, and certainly something I'll never, ever forget.
Yeah. I wish I could have been in the stadium. Unfortunately, not covering it elsewhere, but yeah, what scenes that was.
Well, when Will Arnett said, opened up the match and said, "An honor with a U."
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty brilliant.
But you don't have a on the pitch moment, Wonger.
I don't, you know what? I don't really have an on the pitch moment. Look, I scared the crap out of my neighbor because I was watching the match in the backyard, and I screamed, and she was like, "Ah!" And so she was right beside me gardening, and I didn't know it. So that was a moment. But JC, like, it was more about the vibe in Toronto and how amazing. And I know people have said, "Oh, BMO wasn't going to stack up, and Toronto was going to be overwhelmed." But I have to tell you, our city, being so fortunate to live in Toronto, which I love, I moved here from Ottawa, lived in Montreal for university. I love Toronto. I'm a Torontonian now. And the way we hosted, JC and I were fortunate to work with the Star and host those watch parties, Dubs, at Earl's. Mm-hmm. And there was that match, Croatia versus Portugal, where 400 people just coming off the street to watch a match at Earl's upstairs where we were hosting, or 300 people. And it was so much fun. And then to see people with Canadian jerseys, even though they're supporting either Croatia or Portugal. And it shows how far we've come from that first generations of, hey, we're only cheering for Portugal. We're only cheering for whoever our parents, Italy, whoever our parents cheered for. It's now, hey, at least we have two flags. At least it's the Portugal flag and the Canadian flag that are on your car. Mm. And, you know, we've come to a place where it's the second generation of immigrant families that are passing on being Canadian fans now. And that, for me, someone who's only had Canada ever to cheer for. So, like, it literally, I was, you know, always picking and choosing by flipping a coin who I'd cheer for in the World Cup. Oh, am I more French? Am I more English? Is China in there? Like, I didn't have a...
It definitely is.
You know, exactly. But literally, I was born in Germany. Should I cheer for them? You know, like, there was always these now we have a team we can cheer for, a real team, right? In the men's side and the women's side. So there's a real kind of the bringing the two together, the conflation of the success of both teams has allowed me to go, hey, I'm a fan. I want this team. And this goes to the infrastructure, all of that kind of stuff about how we have to give back within development, bringing people together, giving people an opportunity to play not just this sport, but sports across the table, right? Mm-hmm. And not gatekeep to certain sports there, Cathal Kelly or whatever your name is.
Oh, boy. Right. No, it's a, we won't even talk about that take.
No, but I mean, but those are those things, right? Mm-hmm. Like you don't want to gatekeep. And this is, so going back to that original conversation we had about the bubble, Kara, I'm always reminding these guys, I go, they mention like, oh yeah, me and this person. I'm like, who are you referring to? Because they're literally naming stars. And I'm like, I know who you're referring to, but people who are listening to us on SiriusXM, on the podcast for the first couple times, they don't recognize, like when we're talking about Boy George, it's not the Halloween Boy George. It's the actual Boy George who hit on Craig in a bathroom. Like, these are those things that we have to talk about that are brilliant.
Legend. Legend status. No, it's true. And I threw out the name Britt before I said Aaron McLeod, whom a lot of people are probably familiar with as a legend of the game and played in Northern Super League and a multiple World Cup, Olympic participating and winning medal-winning goalkeeper for our country, but Brittany Timko, legend in herself, who broke her rib, and we dragged to a baseball game after the fact, and she had a punctured lung. We didn't know about it. I wanted to say quickly, Wonger. I think we have a team now to cheer for. Like, I think it's the arrival of this men's national team on the world stage, right, where the women's team was for a long time, mm-hmm. but co-hosting a World Cup and making that a tangible experience for people and the two things meeting. So I think for me, the moment on the pitch is tough to argue, Cara, with your point about Eustachio, because I think he's emblematic of everything that this team stands for. And we alluded to the leadership and just his poise and his composure in that moment to fully embrace it and be able to bury that volley. It had to be him in the moment. But one that comes close is probably the Kone injury, the game in itself where they needed a win. It was their first ever win at a World Cup. And then it's the instantaneous response from Nathan mm-hmm. Saliba, and then to lift up the jersey of his buddy, like growing up in Quebec together. And then what it meant for the team. I mean, I think that's something that's going to stand the test of time. But for me, to combine the two things, to your point, Wonger, is that off the pitch, like I was really concerned, and Cara, you flagged the fact that I planted the seed of doubt where I was really concerned that first game that it was going to be blue. You know, the stands at Toronto Stadium at BMO, that these Bosnian fans.
Did you share that with Cara too, that video?
Well, Cara listened to it.
No, I was listening. And I came home, I listened to it. I was driving, I came home and I was like, you guys, we need to go to Toronto. There needs to be more Canadian fans at this game.
Cara, okay, so this is on our dark web, and Dubs and I and Sharms, we got our full day packed. Craig's at the stadium.
Yeah, everyone pulled in all kinds of directions.
We see each other at the beginning. JC and I are hosting a show. Dubs is going, we're opening the Canadian Securities Exchange, ringing the bell. Mm-hmm. We're running around. We've got a day full, like our schedules are packed. And during this time, Dubs goes, you can't share this, but all the Bosnian Herzegovina people are, and it's a video that looked like 30,000 people walking down the street, and then they showed up, it's about 3,000, and it looked great. Yeah. But like Dubs had us all, like the blue wave, we were all panicking.
Yeah,
panicking.
I don't want to pass the buck, but Shireen had done a really in-depth piece on the Bosnian fans and the diaspora and like from St. Louis and how it kind of bled into Canada and how Croatian diaspora showed up, right? The mm-hmm. Portuguese, like we know that's what Toronto and Canada is all about. And it's a little bit about that transition too, to supporting Canada as you pointed out, but I had a real fear that the stadium that day was not going to be a red out. And so to see that happen, to see the support outside the stadium, the march, the flares, the chants, and then to see that again versus Qatar, and then to see it also maybe twice the size or three times the size in Vancouver was incredible to see. So we're really tipping point in this country. And on that, Cara, at SoFi, like there was, given again, the amount of immigrants that live there that are American citizens that are perhaps not, and then the workers at SoFi who were concerned about the presence of ICE. Like, what was it like outside the stadium? Like, there's an accessibility issue with the price of these tickets. So there are a lot of fans that were probably pushed to the outside and celebrated their teams and supported their teams from afar. But what was the kind of political climate, like just the reality of being outside a stadium in LA?
Yeah. So I saw ICE multiple times on the concourse during the game, like walking in like packs of like 10 with like bulletproof vests on, and they don't say ICE anymore. It says something like federal agent something, but it's very clearly ICE. And you can just see the crowds just like part as they're walking through, which, you know, they love, but it's like, it's eerie. It's uncomfortable. I think the SoFi staff, all the workers at SoFi threatened to go on strike. I'm sure you heard about that leading up to it. So I was surprised in that first game to see ICE there, because I thought that because we were, maybe naively, I thought because the show was going on that something had been put in place to make those workers feel more safe. Mm-hmm. But evidently not, because they were around the stadium as well. I remember I was looking for a bathroom because the walk from the parking lot to the media entrance was like 25 minutes. And I like walked up to a group of people, staff, and then I realized who, as I was about to ask the question, who the staff was, and it was a bunch of ICE agents. And I'm like, I just about asked the ICE agents for the bathroom. But it was just, it was uncomfortable, and it made me angry. And I'm sure other people felt the exact same way. As far as this atmosphere outside the stadium, I was always surprised because of how expensive tickets were to see how packed the stadium was. And you talk about those Bosnia and Herzegovina fans that you thought were going to end up in Toronto. They all ended up in LA. So you weren't completely wrong, because that stadium was packed. I was shocked. I was like, how are there this many Bosnians in LA? How, like, you would, I don't know a single person from Bosnia and Herzegovina, but they were all at the stadium, which was super impressive. So people are still going to the games. People are still finding a way. And then those that aren't are hanging out around the stadium and at the Fan Fest. So I think even though a lot of people felt like they weren't able to be inside, they were still able to feel a part of the tournament, because the World Cup just takes over everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wish more people had been able to go. I wish more youth players had been able to go, because if we're talking about growing the game, that's the way to do it. You know, how many kids would have, if had they been able to go to that game, would that would probably be the highlight of their life and the reason they want to play soccer going forward. My own, my son, Diego, he said after we took him to the Canada-South Africa game, and the moment he got home, he goes, "Mommy, I think I actually want to be a soccer player, not a baseball player." And I'm like, it's right there.
That's it.
Instantaneous, you know? And I'm like, well, your name is Diego, so yeah, let's do it. But, you know, like, that's the proof right there. It's that easy, or could be. And so I think that is the biggest missed opportunity.
But his middle name is Roger, so he can go either way.
It's Ricardo.
Diego Roger Romero.
Oh my goodness. Actually, I wanted to mention this before. It's kind of a crossover, because you were talking about the Mexico fans at the stadium for the Canada-South Africa game, because they maybe expected Mexico to be there. Did you see any of the socials of Raul Jimenez wearing that Harry Kane match-worn jersey that he swapped with them after the match at the Azteca?
No, but that's amazing.
He's sporting it. He's on holiday. One of them, he's got helmet on, and he's wearing his match worn Harry Kane number 9.
That's
which
so
is incredible.
Cool. I mean, like, you need more reasons to love Raul Jimenez. Mm. If there was one guy I was rooting for on Mexico, it was him. But that's so cool.
Well, I wanted to. Yeah, this is. I wanted to talk about the other teams. U.S. men's national team. Mm-hmm. We were talking about how, at least I always keep saying, look, Canada was number 30 going in, or around that. Mexico was, I think, 10. U.S. men's team around 15, 16, because it kept changing, you know, the FIFA rankings. were the expectations set too high? I remember Landon Donovan going on Rich Eisen and saying, look, they're not going to win. Their job is to have a great performance, maybe top eight, and and an incredible run top four. But I mean, I'm pretty happy with where we came from in Canada. What is the after effects of that high expectation from the media and all the glare and focus from this spotlight? What's the aftermath for that for the U.S. men's national team? And was it fair?
Yeah, I think personally, I said round of or I said quarterfinals for the U.S. I thought that that's where they belonged. I did not think they would win a quarterfinal match, but I thought that they could at least make it that far. I think the fact that they didn't is not the big disappointment here. I think the way that they lost in the round of 16 is the big disappointment, because they looked so dreadful. I think Belgium, I think everybody underestimated Belgium, the U.S. team, you know, the media, fans. I think that just because Belgium was somewhat underwhelming leading up to that game doesn't mean that they didn't have the quality and the talent to beat the U.S. So I think it's a bit of both. I think the U.S. didn't show up on the day, but I also think Belgium is better than we thought. So, I mean, they're the only team to have scored against Spain. That says something right there. Spain would have a complete, you know, they would be going on conceding zero goals into the World Cup final if it weren't for Belgium. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, but it's the way that they crashed out, and that it not only did they not look like a good team, but they looked like they gave up as well, which I think is the huge criticism. You know, they looked nervous. They looked like they hadn't been there before, and they had, but, you know, not recently. And I think it was a perfect storm of so many things, you know, the drama with Flo Balogun's red card. I think they felt it. They're like, you know, I've seen Tim Ream do some interviews and say, like, no, it wasn't a distraction. How could it not be? Especially when some of your players are being in the position that I'm in. And this is something I was trying to explain to people, is my social media feed is a lot of European and Canadian. So I have a bit more of the perspective of how people were feeling about it worldwide. Because if you look at just the American Twitter, it's like, yeah, let's go. We've got Flo Balogun back. Like, come on. Like we got this. And whereas the rest of the world is like, no, you guys are cheaters. Yeah. And you don't deserve to win now. And it's like, maybe some of the Americans were not feeling that, but a lot of those Americans were born in Europe, raised, they're playing in Europe. You don't think their teammates are texting them being like, oh, dude, like your team's a bunch of cheaters. Even if they're joking about it, they're feeling that. They're hearing that. They're hearing the criticism. People are joking about it, but they're going to take that to heart, because all of a sudden everything shifted. They're not the underdog anymore that's impressing everybody and suddenly, you know, outperforming people's expectations, at least globally. Now they're hated. And I think that they felt that going into that match, even if only some of them did.
I think they dropped the ball a little bit there. I mean, I honestly think that Pochettino shouldn't have played Balogun. That was my opinion. I thought he should have just said, listen, under the circumstances, everything around this decision was wrong, and we're going to stick by it, and I'm not going to play him. And if they had done that and they managed to win, I think a lot of people would have respected that. Mm-hmm. And because they ended up playing him and they get stuffed in the meantime, now the narrative is still going to be, we don't like you. And we hope you get stuffed every single time you play in the future. So I don't think the long-term ramifications of this are good. It's not a good look whatsoever on the U.S.'s part.
No, but also at the same time, if you're Flo Balogun, how are you not going to play? Like, if that's me, I've trained my whole life for this opportunity. This is my World Cup where I am making a name for myself. I mean, I'm expecting Flo Balogun to get a big move to a mid-level club, maybe in the Premier League, from this.
And oh, that's a good
show. How is he not going to take that opportunity to increase his value even more on a personal level, but also just to help his team and show out on the world's biggest stage? I mean, if that's you, are you really going to turn down that opportunity? You feel like you just got a literal get out of jail free card.
Yeah, I mean, I feel badly for him because he handled the whole situation prior to the band.
Brilliantly.
Yeah, he really did.
Right? Brilliantly.
Class.
He did everything right.
Yeah, he did. And I don't blame him for playing. I just think that Pochettino could have taken that away from, yes, all those things you talked about, but from the US's point of view and the world, the look that it looked like from the outside looking in was just a really bad look for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And in many ways, Infantino is saved by the abject performance of the US team on the day, right? Because the integrity of the game is at risk. It continues to be at risk because of the political interference. But had the US managed to win that, then there was a lot to be answered for at that point. And I think, Forrest, you make a good point about Pochettino inserting himself there and maybe taking a little bit of the glare and the blame, as it were, like kind of take the focus off of Balogun and say, no, I'm going to decide you don't get to play. But imagine they lose, that maybe not in the way that they did, but they still come out on the wrong end. He maybe gets blamed and maybe like the contract renegotiations don't really go the way as planned because he gets scapegoated.
He's fine. He's going to get a job somewhere else.
Like, yeah, I suppose.
But I see what you're saying though, Amy, because again, the narrative in the US was so different. It was,
was the full narrative?
It never should have been a red card to begin with. So this is justice served. It was very, very different. And I could see it in my social media feed. It was like night and day. You know,
but so this goes to the education, Kara. Like, did you was this an opportunity or not your opportunity, but was this when these conversations came up and your perspective was needed? Were they open to your perspective? The people who took the side of
who are in that echo chamber. Called?
Yeah. In there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think so. I think it was illuminating for some people. They were like, wait, what? Not everybody's so excited that this has been overturned. They were saying overturned because that's the way everybody was seeing it. It was, oh no, they're saying that, you know,
like justice is served.
Red card. Yeah. Mm. But no, it's just suspended. So nobody has admitted that anybody made a mistake here. It's just, he's now allowed to play magically, you know, and serve. Like, I was trying to explain it to my kids and they were like, I was like, okay, Sebastian, listen, we take your Nintendo away. We take your Nintendo away, you know, as a punishment. That's the consequence when you don't behave. This would be like taking your Nintendo away, but letting you play it then during the week you're not allowed to play during the week anyways. Like you're only allowed to play on the weekends. So Fuller and Balogun's going to serve his red card suspension after the World Cup when nothing matters. Like, how does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. You know? So he's like, but I don't get it. Like, why would they let him play, or why would they make him sit out after the World Cup? That doesn't mean anything. And I'm like, exactly. You're right. There you go.
I was just going to say, so everybody knows, Sebastian's middle name is Lance. Just so everybody knows.
It's Mateo.
Okay, before we get, I want to hear you, Kara, on like your predictions for the final and maybe perhaps if we have time, the third place match. Does it mean anything? That's a whole different conversation. But just quickly about the U.S. So they had this momentum going into that Belgium game. It's halted based on this performance. So do you think while a lot of people were hedging their bets that their success might push the sport forward, do you think that the way that they lost versus Belgium hurts the growth of the sport at all?
I think it does. I think because it is just like a glaring example of how different soccer in the US is to the rest of the world and what happens when the US is trying to compete against a European country. And it just sort of validates a lot of people's opinions and dismissiveness about soccer in North America. So I think in that sense, it hurts. But I think regardless of the US team's performance, I think this World Cup has done a lot, just putting soccer in front of mind for everybody. It's unavoidable, you know, at this point. People are tuning in, people are watching, people are getting to see teams. I mean, just look at the top four teams left in this tournament. You know, you're just watching the best of the best at this point. So I think hosting the World Cup is going to do great things for the growth of soccer in North America. But yes, I think it's incredibly unfortunate the way the US finished the tournament, because for a lot of people, it's just another chance for them to go, see, it's exactly what we thought.
Yeah. Right. I think that, I mean, from the US expectations, it certainly went up for me as the tournament went on, because there wasn't signs before the tournament that this was going to happen. And they weren't, Pochettino ran out of ideas almost. What do I do with this group? We've got some good players, but we're not playing as a team. Friendlies are getting beat. Like, it just didn't look as though they were going to do well at all. So the expectation went up because of that. I think you could probably say the same with Mexico. You know, for the last few years, I would put Canada at the top of those three teams. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you put Mexico and Azteca, and they become superheroes all of a sudden. And they play way above. I mean, you talk about Raul Jimenez. Like, there's a guy that when he shows up and puts that green jersey on, he turns into an absolute megastar. And even club football, he can't even match that at the same level. But for some reason, again, with Mexico, the expectations went up, because if they had scored and equalized against England when they were under the press and they were under the cosh, it would have been the same outcome as Argentina against England, I think. I think that England would have lost to Mexico if they could have found that equalizing goal.
Yeah. And I think England is where they are right now because they had that success against Mexico, packing it in, parking the bus, but they were down to 10 men. So in that moment, it was necessary. They did it similar against Norway, found success despite maybe not the best tactics. And then Tuchel tries it again. And obviously Argentina punishes them in just absolute insane fashion.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that before. Just a complete nosedive, like holy, lay an egg in that second half.
You know? I mean, but the substitutions were crazy. I mean, Tuchel, he just sets a message to his team that we are going to sit back and invite pressure. And it was the worst possible thing, because even if Argentina tied it up, which they did, you thought, well, how are you going to change it now? Like, what's your outlet? Yeah. Like, how
now are you've got Dan Byrne plodding around at the top of the box trying to get on the end of long balls. Completely unsuccessfully. Like, where do you go from here?
Yeah,
it was the biggest panic move, and so early. Like, it's one thing to panic 10 minutes left in the game, but like, you've got a whole half to play.
Whole half with extra time added and injury time or whatever was going to happen. It was ridiculous.
And if you're my first thought now with England playing in this third place match is how pissed I would be if I'm one of the players for England at my manager for absolutely hanging my team out to dry. And so I'm wondering how they respond. You know, are they going to play with a chip on their shoulder at this point? Are they going to go out and just completely dominate in spite of their manager? You know, I just think that there's a lot of feelings right now within that team. And I'm very, very curious to see how it plays out in that third place match.
I am too. It may be the first third place match that I'm going to be somewhat excited to take in.
Well, it's interesting because you think, I mean, we played in a third place match in the 2003 World Cup, and it's just such an interesting game to play in because nobody cares. Nobody cared. It wasn't England versus France, which this one, I think there'll be a lot of people tuning in just for the quality of the game. And also the fact that, especially France, this is, you know, they're at their best when they're free, when the pressure's off. So I think we could see some really beautiful soccer, especially from the French side. We might see a really hard-nosed English side that's just completely pissed off, which is also very exciting. But for us in 2003, nobody cared. The stands were empty. But individually, there's always something to gain. You know, like a lot of us were, I mean, I was, you know, looking for a scholarship. And that is where a lot of those US colleges saw me play was in that game, because we played the US in that game, in that third place match of the 2003 World Cup. So, you know, you look at Mbappe, he's still got a golden boot to win.
Yeah.
So we could see him trying to score a few goals. And actually, I was surprised statistically, the third place match at a World Cup is the highest scoring game in World Cup history. It's got a 3.8 average goals per game. So
interesting.
You know, that alone is a reason to tune in.
Yeah. No, you make a very good point, Cara, about, you know, the individuals, and they're doing it for themselves. Like they're not going to go out there and tank because it's, you're putting yourself in a
position. Everybody has an opportunity to increase their value with this match because there will be eyes on this one.
Yeah. Right. You're putting yourself in a shop window in some regard, right? Okay. Quickly, before we let you go, thoughts on the final? Spain or Argentina? What is your gut telling you?
My gut is telling me Spain. I mean, you've got the tournament's best attack. Argentina scored more goals than any other team, 19 goals. 12 of them have been after 75 minutes, though. So there's definitely that never say die. You cannot count Argentina out. But Spain's only conceded one goal all tournament, kept six clean sheets. They made the most dynamic and talented attack in France in the semifinals look completely pedestrian. So, you know, I don't know if we can expect another moment of brilliance from Lionel Messi, you know, against the most organized defense on the planet in this one. So I'm going to have to go with Spain, but it feels like a mistake because we've all counted out Argentina so many times. You know, they've been on the verge of elimination in every single knockout stage game that they've played. And I think a lot of us, especially going into that semifinal, saw that as a weakness, saw that as a deficiency, that they, so many teams took them so deep, but it's that resilience and that never say die attitude. They're cockroaches. They just will not go away. And maybe that is why they win.
Cucarachas.
Well, okay. I'm gonna give you a scenario then. Sebastian Mateo's Nintendo, you have to bet it. And he will dislike you for at the least about two more years. Who are you choosing in that scenario?
What, Spain or Argentina?
Yes.
I said Spain, but I feel as the words are coming out, I feel like it's a mistake. But I'm going to go with Spain.
Okay. And just before, thanks so much for always jumping on with us, Cara. But last time you were on, you got a comment. And I want to read it. Our friend Charlie McTrout, Cara Lang, you've outdone yourselves, Footy Prime. Awesome guest to have on during the World Cup. And she fits perfectly with the vibe of the show. So we're always so happy to see you.
Thanks, guys.
Even more, congrats to Footy Prime for booking her. So whoever that took her.
Really, it was just a pat on the back.
Yeah, exact for us.
Well done, guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We'll take credit for everything you said all episode long. You're the best, my friend. Thanks so much
for
stopping
by. So fun. Always.
Come back anytime. Say hi to Ricky and Seabass and Soleil and Diego.
I will. Thanks, guys.
And Lance.
My friend. Yeah.
Roger.
Bye, Carl. Yeah.
Roger that. Okay. This is much too close. Yeah. Car is the best, isn't she?
Yeah.
While we're
doing that, I was going through some of the comments based off of her last appearance. And it was funny because there was this comment too, from Crown and Guillotine 6645. Funny, Craig is upset about the dark arts. At West Ham, he was known as the vampire, afraid of crosses. And it just made me laugh. I'm like, you know, we have a full, obviously we could almost do a show a day on the comments we get. So everybody out there reaching out on YouTube, on Twitter, across the board, on Patreon, thank you so much for all the comments, because literally they make our show go. And I mean, Cryops the other day sent a whole rundown of what we wanted to talk, and there was that letter that we got, I forget from whom again, but it was, we only touched the first question. He had a question for all of us.
I know. And that we'll get to it. Thank you, Michael, for your email.
Yeah, it was Michael.
Yes,
sorry.
You can contact us. Is our email? FootyPrime?
FootyPrimePodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. So that's another way. If you have something a little bit more in depth or you don't want to share publicly, you can always email us as well, because we read everything. We still have to figure out on Patreon how to access the comments, but
yes,
we'll get there. But we really appreciate it, because that's something we do well. right? Yes, again, the credit is not with us, but we thank our listeners and everybody who engages with us, because just like other comparable podcasts, we're talking about football, Canadian football, and the world game. They might resonate a bit more because they have more followers, and we want to keep pushing that. We want to keep building our followers, but the amount of engagement and comments that we get, positive and negative, I think is unrivaled. So we really, really appreciate you.
Mm. Especially when they throw shade at us, because that makes me laugh all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I also get a lot of comments about my CBC mug. So here it is, folks. Yes.
It looks like an old classic. Present.
It is an old classic.
Yeah.
I have a pair of socks, CBC socks that I got. Mm.
My dad used to have like the leisure suit, like in the 70s, like the matching kind of pants and the top. And there was like the short sleeve kind of dress suit. Like there are a couple of confirmation and like religious occasions in my life, or like it's Easter, everybody's dressed up and we're going to church, where my dad's in like a short sleeve dress suit. And he had one short sleeves, buttons down the front, all CBC logos everywhere. So that is like a relic, but it's like a classic.
I wanted to touch on both of you two. What is your scenario? We have two more SiriusXM shows, World Dailies. So Saturday and Sunday. What are your guys' work week heading into the last weekend in Canada for the World Cup? What are you doing? Where are you on any? Are you on anything anymore, Dubs?
I'm going to be on CTV tomorrow doing a quick hit. So that's a Saturday. I was just wondering, my brain, the wheels were turning to see if like, are we recording on the Friday? And can I say it's Friday? So that was why there was a bit of hesitation there. And then the match on Sunday, which I'll get to just enjoy and consume. And again, strike that balance between watching the game and understanding what's happening so I can discuss it and disseminate it and distill it down to narratives the next day on Footy Prime, because we'll be unpacking the final on the Monday, which will not be a Footy Prime World Daily with SiriusXM.
No, normal one.
Our regular podcast. So again, thank you in advance for tuning in. But yeah, just get a chance to watch it with family, hopefully outside, drag the TV out and be around the pool and the kids and everybody.
So Walsh Family Watch Party.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Amazing. Craig, where can we find you over the next couple of days?
Not much going on. We did a bunch of shows during the week at Sportsnet leading up to it. And then everything will be reactionary after the final on Sunday.
Are you doing a Sportsnet hit on Sunday?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so we'll be able to see you there on Sunday. And I was just thinking, if you want to find me, I'll probably be on my back porch.
Yelling at your neighbors.
Scaring my neighbor again. But Dubs, do you have a watch party for the third place game? Like, is this anything?
No, but as I said before, and I meant it, I will be watching it. Not just because we have to talk about it, but because I'm truly interested in it. Like, because we've talked about, you know, on our podcast this week, where Forrest and I Forrest said it first and I agree with him. I think there will be a fair amount of rotation. But I think that the players will still have something to play for. I think it'll be more competitive than we actually think. And Cara made a very good point that there are a lot of players who are top players in the world game on huge wage bills that have nothing to play for and are thinking about their club season and returning and making sure that they're fit and not injured. But there are plenty of players who are still playing for contracts and wanting to put themselves in that shop window. So I think it'll be more meaningful than we probably give the match itself credit for.
Craiger, you?
What, for the third place game?
Yeah. Are you making, is it appointment viewing for you? Is it, I have
got to mark
this?
Yeah,
or
it is.
Can I ask this? Will you also have the British Open on at the same time? Will it block off kind of other viewing? Because we've missed, I don't know if you guys know how much we've missed.
No, I know.
Friggin' Wimbledon, not that I'm a big tennis guy, but Wimbledon. They had the home run derby
It's the home run derby.
Derby. There's a whole all-star
game. No, it's
not. I know. All-star. There's a whole all-star game. Not that I watch that. But there's these entire things that have been happening in sports, and we have not even, like, it hasn't even hit my radar until I read it on something. So it's quite interesting how little. So is it appointment viewing for you, Craig?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. I might have the British Open on the other screen, but yeah. It, no, it's intriguing. I find it very intriguing to see what they do, rotation and what they do. And then Mbappe, does he go full out? I think he does. I think he tries to nick a couple goals here and put himself in the conversation for the goal.
I think he and Kane will be trading blows. We'll see.
Yeah, let's hope it's 5-4 or something.
All right, well, that's it for us today. Thanks so much again to Carl Lang Romero for stopping by. And Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at @footyprimeig and on Twitter at @footy_prime. And check out weareFootyPrime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Thank you.
I love how you took over at the end, Wonger. Like, you didn't have full faith in me to be able to steer the show.
No, I have full faith in you.
Kara jumped off.
I have full faith in you. It's just I wanted to get to some things about self-promotion.
Yeah.
Which I don't have faith in you about. There's certain things, and JC, you can leave this in. I love you guys, but you're the worst self-promoters in the history of self-promotion. You know, So if I wasn't around, I don't know if anyone would promote your appearances or talk about what you guys do. So I just want to make sure you're going to interview.
Well, we appreciate that.
Okay, love you both. And great podcast. We'll talk. Let's stay on after this. We'll do the side stuff.